Welcome to the 99s. This week's episode is brought to you by you, the listeners. A huge shout out to everyone who's donated to our crowdfunder so far, namely the mysterious Mr. PYO, Gary and Mary Nurse, 99 star player Matt Nurse, and Cora Cahill. And not forgetting the OG 99 supporter, Liam Phillips. Shout out to the Neaton Cricket Club, they won their opening fixture of the league this weekend. If you want to donate to our crowdfunder, you can find the link in our Instagram bio at the99sRugby or on our website www.the99sRugby.com. We're also brought to you by the Yarder Collective, the dry bar revolutionising the future of nightlife and the best alcohol-free retailer out there. Use the code 99rugby24 for a 5% discount on any orders over £10, with your savings helping us out here at the 99s. I myself have just ordered a shedload of kombucha, as I developed a taste for it having bought one bottle this week from the shop. You can find them at www.yardercollective.co.uk, and there's also a link on our website. Anywho, here's this week's show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the 99s Rugby Podcast. As an organisation, we currently aren't facing any lawsuits or potential High Court judgments, unlike our friends over at Aldi. Fight the power, Colin or Cuthbert, whatever you call your caterpillar, each child should get a caterpillar cake and not have to pay for the nose. Fuck M&S. How you doing, Dav?
I'm very well. You seem quite emotionally attached to Cuthbert the caterpillar. I mean, I'm all for it. Fight the power. Fuck M&S. But I mean,
I'm not going to lie. I didn't even know which one was which.
I don't think it matters.
Just fuck M&S.
Yeah. Fight the power. I've completely forgot how I've been this week. I was just amazed how charged you were with that. It was aggressive. It was emotion. I can feel that. It's resonated with me.
I'm all hopped up on non-alcoholic beer, Dav.
Angry's up the blood.
No, man. So what's been going on this week? What's new?
I don't know what's new. I don't know. For me personally, in the world, both.
Yeah, man. What's been going on?
I've been to work, had my week off and back to work again. That's, you know, that's fine. That's work. Fixed a few computers, so on and so forth. What else have I done this week? Anything good? Oh, I played football last week, as previously mentioned on the pod last week.
Yeah, and how'd it go?
Officially, we won 5-0 because it was a walkover because the other team didn't show up. But then we played second in the league in a friendly and we lost. But didn't embarrass ourselves. It was like 7-5 or something. So
we're still awaiting the competitive debut of David Nurse in the Leicester Forest East five-a-side leagues.
Indeed we are. One thing that I feel I really bring to the team is the willingness to play aimless long balls because of the poor quality of everybody involved. You do get reward for just pinging it diagonally. Even if it goes out for a throw-in, you put them under pressure instantly. I know everyone else seemed reluctant to do it. I was happy to get it and just punt it. And we nearly scored off it several times.
So what you're telling me, Dav, is you've brought the classic December-January rugby union tactic of booting it to the opposition's 5-metre line and making them try and have a line out in their own five and feeding off the scraps and getting a few dirty tries.
That is exactly what. Yes, I've brought that into a summer six-a-side league. It's revolutionary. I imagine we will see it at the Euros this summer, because I can't see how Hungary are going to outplay anybody, so they may as well just punt it long and feed off the scraps from the throw-in.
All right. Well, you heard it here first.
How about you? How's your week been?
Really, really pretty good, actually. A lot of good stuff's happened, mate. I ordered a bike finally. You know how hard it's been to get any sort of fitness equipment last year. I finally got a bike with a flywheel on it, so like a really nice, good home sort of exercise bike. Finally got that on a Tuesday morning, assembled that together. So I've got that here now so I can start amping up the training ahead of the summer of sevens, so, you know, get the sprints in and whatnot. Easier on the legs. The old limbs getting up the big hills and stuff around here aren't the best for running, so that was exciting. And then, you know, just back on with training with the guys on Thursday night, you know, great numbers again, things looking really positive for us going into like a extended pre-season from May. And then I was down at the club today watching all of our junior teams out training, which was pretty special, to be honest. It was great to see a lot of, you know, happy faces and under sevens and under eights all the way through to sort of under 15s just belting each other about, having a good time, really.
That sounds class. I mean, it's so weird how those things, like just a field full of people, we take for granted. Like, I mean, obviously those young kids, it's their first ever rugby session, and like, it must be great for them.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
I suppose there was maybe a little bit of something before Christmas, but like, for some of those kids, have not played rugby in so long, so it must be a real, like, yeah, great relief for them to be playing again. That sounds really good.
Yeah, it was a great day, and I rewarded myself with an ice cream afterwards as well. I had a double scooper, which you can, if you check out the Instagram, the 99s Rugby, you can see my delightful, I had a double chocolate and cookie dough double scooper. It's quite
the ice cream. Structurally sound as well. It is they are big scoops on top of each other.
They don't mess about. And do you know what? It's for down south, Dav, it's not too expensive. So big ups to the Honiton Dairy, the Honiton Ice Cream Shop. But the reason why I went for the double scooper instead of a single, sort of meandering onto what I see you picking up and drinking, a lovely golden coloured beverage, is obviously with the less calories from drinking. I went out and had dinner on Friday night, actually, and Saturday as well, double header, and was drinking non-alcoholic beers the whole time. So I've stuck to it. I hope you have as well. So we've only got 82 more days to go, mate, of the non-alcohol in terms of us drinking. So yeah, so I've actually got one out myself. We've done well here. We planned this ahead of time. The listeners don't know this. It's behind the scenes shit. They don't know what's been going on, but we planned this. We're drinking the same beverage, courtesy of our friends at Yarda who sent those. Those came through early this week as well. We're drinking the same non-alcoholic beverage so we can sort of rate it together. Now, we're drinking this week Nirvana Brewery's traditional pale ale, alcohol-free, 0.0%, all the way zeros. Taste notes-wise, they claim it's lightly roasted barley, balanced and crisp hoppy flavour, and it's got a smooth caramel malt body, and they're proudly low alcohol. What do you reckon, Keen?
I quite like it. It's not the beeriest beer or non-alcoholic beer I've ever drank. If you had a blindfold on, you probably would say, "Well, that's a beer." Hmm. But it's very not. It is. It's a very pleasant drink. The smooth caramel malty body of the taste notes. That's what comes through for me the most. It's almost. It's almost like apple, but like not doesn't taste not sweet like apple. But you know that sort of like that almost aftertaste. It's kind of like. I'm not a sommelier, as you can tell, because I'm just fumbling my words here. But yeah, there's the finish, I believe that's what it's called after you've drank it in wine world, is it is a sort of caramelly, appley, sort of an autumnal flavour, I would say. It's very nice.
Have you ever had a super malt before?
I've not, no. That's,
it tastes like that.
That's what I imagine super malt would taste like.
Yeah, it's very close to that. So it's quite nice, really. And yeah, no, like you say, I get that caramel flavour for sure. Yeah, the apple kind of like a really sweet taste to it. I like that. Good, yeah, apple. I like that. Good note, Dav, good note. But I'd give it a 7.5 out of 10 because I don't quite feel like I'm drinking a beer. Like I said, I feel like I'm drinking some sort of health drink, like a wheat-based health drink. But as far as a drink overall, that's why it gets, you know, the 7.5 out of 10 because it's quite nice.
Yeah, I would order this again if I had this in like if we went to say a non-alcoholic bar, such as the Yarder Collective in Derby. I'd say, oh, that was very nice. I'll have another. It's very drinkable. So it's not the most beery thing in the world. I think you probably got to take off at least probably 2 points for that if you're rating it as a non-alcoholic beer. But I would go for, I think, yeah. 3 thumbs up. Not sure what out of, but
it's a good start. But no, nice. First one out of the box, not a bad start. Happy with that. So yeah, we'll see what we get next week. But so sounds like we've probably had a pretty decent week then. You know, things are moving on. The world seems to be getting ever so slightly back to normal as the days and weeks pass. I saw NRL on Saturday morning, full stadium in Canberra for the Raiders playing the Eels, like literally full house. So things down under seem like they're bang normal. So hopefully we're not a million miles behind that ourselves. And, you know, 4,000 people watching the mighty Leicester City this evening. So I caught the end of that game, the second half. beating Southampton to make the FA Cup final. Well done to the Foxes, our hometown, you know, club.
Yeah, but neither of us are Leicester fans, but no. It's always nice to see the hometown team do well. It wasn't the best game of football. I had half an eye on that and half an eye on the Rooney game, as they were played simultaneously. The Rooney game was much more entertaining, but obviously there's a bit of gravity to an FA Cup semi-final. But yeah, congratulations, Leicester.
Yeah, hopefully they'll go on to win that. It'd be good for the town. But so not a bad week. Here comes the sort of weekend, really. I guess first off, as usual, sort of headlines to sort of rattle through nice and quick on each of these topics, and then we'll get into our main topic for the evening and a nice little MLR roundup.
There is no MLR roundup. It's a new show out on Mondays.
So, first up on the headlines for the weekend, rugby-wise, England women have set up a Six Nations decider against France. So, both teams have gone 3-3 in their... No, 2-2 in their group or whatever.
2-2, yeah.
Two out of
so
two.
So, both won there. I was surprised to see quite the score that France put on. I was at work, so I couldn't watch it at the time. But I kept an eye on the score, and it was like they were 21-0 up within not very long, France. And they put on a decent scoreline. So it's shaping up to be a tasty encounter. Is it next week, the final?
I believe so.
The placing rounds, because everybody's playing next week.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's only one game that really matters. Yeah. In England and France, so it's definitely one that's worth a watch, I think, that because it's two teams looking like they're in good scoring form, both put on pretty big wins in all their matches, so you've got to hope they come together and we see a 55-all draw.
Yeah, well, with no World Cup this year, it's probably going to be like the sort of closest to, I wouldn't say it'd be the final, because, you know, who could have predicted that at this stage? We don't really know. But, like, it's kind of the closest, I guess, we'll get in the women's game this year to a game of that kind of level, I guess. You know, so best of luck to the England women. Obviously, with us being English men, this will obviously be our take on that game. Hope they go well and we'll watch that game for sure. France, from what I've seen of the sort of clips and highlights, just seems like... And it's kind of a thing that I slate Irish teams for in general. I don't think their conditioning is always at the best level to compete in certain games. I think if teams start well and physical against Irish sides, they struggle. So I think, you know, in terms of what we spoke before about England and France seem to be a lot ahead in terms of their professionalism. And I think that's probably what's happened here. I think judging by that scoreline, you probably could have seen something similar happen if England were to play them as well. And it kind of did, obviously, when England played Scotland and Italy. But the other big result from that weekend is Italy beat Scotland quite convincingly. So,
yeah, well, I saw that. Italy's winning. Big congratulations to them. I watched the England-Scotland game. I watched pretty much all of that. And I thought that Scotland, they looked pretty handy, certainly in attack at times in that game. And England were the better team, and they had a little bit more sort of like firepower, really, and ran away with it in the end. And obviously last week we saw England, was it last week or the week before? It doesn't really matter when, but when England beat Italy, that was, you know, it was very convincing. They had a slower start than they probably would have liked, but the win was, you know, was it 60-odd points they scored? So I wasn't expecting much. I imagined Scotland would win, but for Italy to get a win of that sort of size is, it's really encouraging for them. That's got to be, you know, for them going forward, they go, you know, we can beat Scotland. They're not a bad team. They're probably aiming up next year and they got the full calendar. Wales haven't had the best year this year. They probably have a sniff there and, you know, they can get a couple of wins and you're up the table. It's, you know, if you get third or fourth place, then that's a really good return for them. So encouraging. It's a shame for Scotland, I think, to obviously end up losing both games and quite convincingly, but then Wales did the same. So it's hard in a disrupted year to judge all these teams. I imagine their preparation's been somewhat hamstrung, so they've been kind of thrown together for this tournament. But yeah, I mean, all in all, it's a decent advert for women's rugby, though. Put a lot of good attacking rugby on show, definitely.
Yeah, no, definitely one to tune into this weekend for sure. Looking forward to that. In other sort of rugby news on this weekend, games-wise, another pretty good round of Prem rugby, to be fair. I mean, Friday night's game, haven't had a chance to watch it back yet, but everyone's saying that encounter between Irish and Saints apparently was a big one. So, you know, a lot of people saying that was a really positive game. Obviously, you know, we've had a lot of Titanic encounters this weekend. I sat down and watched the Tigers game this afternoon. Really disappointed with how that finished up. Tigers put in a really good shift, to be fair, and lose out at the end against Bath, giving away a couple of silly penalties. Just on this topic here, I want to get this out there now. We need to stop giving penalties against players for being a little bit shirty. Like today, so like on the touchline, ball goes out. Joe Hayes gives Zach Mercer a little shove. He shoves him back and they sort of go off to the side a little bit, you know, give a little bit of back and forth. Jasper Vase comes up behind Mercer, sort of grabs him by the collar and like throws him out the way. And Luke Pearce gives a penalty against Jasper Vase. I'm like, come on, it's a little bit soft. And the annoying thing about that, Dave, they kick the ball to the corner and they score the winning try. So it's, you know.
I mean, if you're being particularly cynical about it, you go, oh, well, he's got to have more control and not do that. But I mean, if you've played a game of rugby and it starts to kick off, like you're not going to stand on the side, and you do want a bit of that. It gets the crowd going. It's an aggressive game by its nature. It's not,
Dave,
like, okay,
it got the virtual crowd going, Dav. That's all I'm going to say. It got the virtual crowd going. I was going at home. The speakers in the ground perked up a little bit. The guy on the AV, whatever he is, he was getting going for it. He loved it. The only guy who didn't love it was Luke Pearce.
Yeah, you don't want like 30-man brawls like the old days or in French rugby, but you know, and you don't want cheap shots. But I mean, is there anything? There's nothing wrong with a bit of a, you know, a C and two. And I mean, this shirt collar's grabbing stuff. It's a little bit softer. I don't think it does any harm to rugby's product to see people swinging at each other. I mean, everybody who's played rugby has been involved in one of these brawls. Two out of about 300 punches land. The rest of it's just windmilling and hoping that you connect with something, and you never do. And the ones that do connect don't hurt. So, like, it's very rare anyone actually comes out set worse for it. I think you don't want to see dangerous, nasty play, but like if someone does something stupid and is a bit of an arsehole and gets a bit cheeky, I don't think there's anything wrong with, say, grabbing a shirt and then you just sort of have a swing. I you know, ice hockey, it's part of the game. Just you get involved, 10-minute rest, you come back on. I think penalties are soft, and it's a game, like you say, it ends up costing Tigers the game. Yeah, it's a better product, I think, for a bit of a scrap. And it's Leicester Bath. It's a big game. You want that. It's what makes a rivalry. There's a little bit extra to it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, you know, it's one of them. But, you know, a great weekend of Prem rugby again. I know we're not going to dwell too much on it because we don't, you know, that's not our style too much. We're not as interested in that. But, yeah, a cracking weekend again. You know, a great advert for Northern Hemisphere rugby. Things are looking pretty good all round, so fair play there. Good news, though, just on the side of that, the only other thing I want to focus on with the Prem is Jack Noll was back for Chiefs. Saw that game as well on the telly yesterday. Chiefs ended up battering Wasps. I mean, I don't know if you saw the game, but Wasps, wow. I mean, I've not seen a team so loose and scrappy in a long time. Really loose and scrappy.
I did not see the game. It's strange to see those teams that, like Wasps and Gloucester, who were a year or two ago were saying they're playoff contenders, and now they're foot of the table. It's a weird year. Obviously, there's no relegation, which is obviously a strange thing to contend with itself. There has been some good rugby though from pretty much every team, but it's a weird look at the table, seeing who's down the bottom end. But like I say, it has been a pretty good season, I think, to be honest. It has been good rugby on show all through the season. Like you say, good advert for Northern Hemisphere rugby. So, you know, long may it continue. When there's a little bit more on the line in every game, I hope that the teams take this kind of approach, and we're seeing 40, 50 points every match, not 12. because teams don't want to take the risk and would rather have a shot at goal instead of, you know, go for a try, because it's what people want to see, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, and I think we'll talk, obviously the main topic for tonight is going to go one way, and I know next week we're going to focus on potential changes to the top level, because I know they're always banged on about and stuff like that. But I think, yeah, this, the whole argument with relegation, no relegation, I think maybe relegation in a different way will still keep the jeopardy that we want at the bottom of the table, but also at the same time allow teams to not worry as much, you know. So we'll see how that goes for sure. But yeah, no, great week for that, and like I say, good news seeing Jack Noll back out on the pitch. Last couple of things just wanted to cover. Obviously, there's some issues with Lions selection and stuff like that. Premier Rugby, not releasing players apparently and stuff like that. And then I think Rob Baxter called those claims disingenuous. There's been a little bit of hubbub there, but on a, you know, not too much to worry about there at the moment. We'll see how that pans out. But just on the topic of the Lions, unfortunately, we had a couple of people passing away last week. But unfortunately, the man John Dawes has passed away this week. Lions legend. Those who aren't as keen on rugby might not know this, but I know Dav will for sure. He was part of that famous try scored in 1973, the Barbarians against the All Blacks, what they call the greatest try of all time. A lot of people, John Dawes was involved in that move. Yeah. Dawes, Fedeli, Tupullin, Tagareth Edwards.
Yeah. Yeah, that's about 33 forward passes, but nonetheless.
And no one's defending.
Free-flowing rugby at its finest. No, it's obviously very sad news. My mum got into rugby because of that, like, Welsh team of the 70s. So that the Dawes, the Barry Johns, the Williamses, the Gareth Edwards. So that is sad. And like I say, that era of that, like, true amateurism is one of those, like, top legends. And that Welsh team was, like, one of the best ever. And like I said, that Barbarians moment is still to this day, it's like it's a key part of rugby's history, in the same way you look at, like, when England won the 66 World Cup, and from that, you know, long ago, it's football's history. It's, you know, people talk about some of those FA Cup finals from that era, like, that's one of rugby's sort of almost earliest, like, televised famous moments. For him to be part of that, you know, his impact on the game is something that's, you know, and that whole team, that era, can not be understated. So, sad news as it is for anyone, but yeah. May he rest in peace. And thoughts go out to his family. And I think a couple of the clubs he played for had released some pretty nice touching statements. So that's, you know, nice to see.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the sideburns of those days are kind of like the Chiefs mullet of today, aren't they? In a way, they're kind of a bit like an iconic sort of thing. So, you know, it's a shame to see one of those guys go. But what a career, what a guy. I mean, I'd love to have been a part of those tours of like the 70s and 80s, like the Lions and stuff like that. I imagine, like, you know, proper tours, as they say. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
they were interesting.
Those real tours. But back then as well, they weren't. That was the closest it got to being professional as well, when they go on those tours, because that was all there for, was playing rugby.
Yeah, yeah, they got paid, didn't they? Like, to, like, work would give them paid leave and stuff like that, because the Lions would sort stuff out apparently and things, which is brilliant.
Yeah, they'd go and they'd probably train a little bit more than they were used to, and then not be anywhere near their wives for like 3 months. So they probably.
Imagine being on one of those first tours. Imagine being one of those first tours where they rode like a boat. They sailed on a boat to like Australia or New Zealand.
Yeah, it's like 8 weeks to get there. It's wild. Yeah. It's like the that famous like the original All Blacks tour, isn't it? And they like, it was like 8 weeks or something on the boat just to get there.
But they toured for 3 months, didn't they?
Something like they were here like for ages.
Yeah,
yeah, and it's like there's everyone. Like every club that played them has got like pictures from that day. That's like truly like rugby's earliest memories in like the early 1900s. That would be so cool. I'm like, we've been on like a very small school tour that was like what, 3 weeks in Canada. Imagine being on a couple of months tour to somewhere that's like where nobody traveled any either. Well, it was really rare that you'd go abroad. So to then go and do that, that would be so cool.
I hope that outside of coronavirus, I hope that there's a way that clubs can maybe find some money to make it easier for their players to do it. And maybe look at this, like the amateur semi-pro level of rugby, like maybe look at this a little bit, you know, because I know we're going to talk in a minute actually about the changes, and it might allow for this to happen. I just would really love to see like amateur clubs and semi-pro clubs go back a little bit in time. Like let's, you know, I know that we're moving forward, but let's move away from this 30-odd game a season and have like a proper tour somewhere and go to Canada or South Africa and play club sides. And I hope when COVID clears up and we get back to normality more and more, that's going to be something that a lot of clubs do. I know it's something, you know, that we're going to be traveling about as much as possible, I'm sure, when we can, to go and see tournaments and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, it'll be really exciting, I think. And I'm excited for the Lions. I'm glad the Lions are going to South Africa. We kind of saved the tour a little bit in that regard because they're still touring. So that's really exciting. I just hope that the issues, like I said, with Premier Rugby and that gets cleared up so the guys can go and play, because especially with guys like Jack Noll getting back on the pitch this week, he's going to be desperate to put his best foot forward to get a chance on the plane, you know. So more power to them, and that's exciting. Speaking of South Africa and such, just last sort of headline for the week is, I don't know if you've seen much of this, mate, but the Rainbow Cup, you know, this sort of weird competition that they're doing.
I had a look into this. I saw the rule changes is the only seemingly like coherent piece about this competition that I've seen.
Yeah.
Everything else I can tell, it's the Pro 14, but with extra South African teams, like the normal Super Rugby franchises. But I can't see there's like any format or anything. I know they're starting with rivalry fixtures, but because there's only a handful of teams in Scotland and Italy, those teams are playing each other as rivalries.
Yeah.
Why can't the Italian and Scottish teams play each other? Why have they got to travel for their rivalry games? I don't know.
Well, it's everything that's going on is making it complex, isn't it? And it's kind of like, it kind of begs the point, like, why do it in a way? I find the Pro 14's weird. I don't know whether, would we be better off just having, you know, the South African teams have their own domestic professional league and then just have them come into the Heineken Cup, maybe? The best four teams in their league come into the Heineken Cup every year. I feel like that would be better. It'd create a bit more buzz about us playing the Cheaters or someone like that, like one of the, you know, the European clubs. Because otherwise, if they're just in the Pro 14 every year, it's a lot of travelling. What about if COVID or something like that happens again and the Scottish teams can't travel to South Africa for the 3-week tour to play them? It just becomes like a lot of added nonsense to the Pro 14, I think.
I mean, I said this Rainbow Cup, from what I gather, is a one-off and it's an end-of-season cup.
I've heard
but this. I think the plan going forward is that it's going to be a Pro 18 or whatever it is, because I assume they're not going to have the like the Lions and the Stormers in there.
Yeah,
this is off topic because obviously the actually one of the ways the rule changes, not the competition itself. But It's kind of like, I mean, next week we're going to touch on it again with fixing rugby, but and professional rugby. It's just sort of, it's a bit of like the bloat of professional rugby at the minute, where they've not really, seemingly, there's not a clear idea as to what they want professional rugby to be.
Yeah.
So at the minute, it's just literally throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. I don't know. Okay, if there's no fans, it doesn't matter. But like you say, like, does Benetton versus the Cheaters get anyone's tails up? I don't think it does. Unless you're like one of Benetton's big fans, or six of them, go, Mamma Mia, we get to go to Bloemfontein. I cannot wait. I don't see who that really benefits.
No. But here's the thing, mate. I mean, how are those Leinster players going to deal with having an extra 6 weeks off if all these extra fixtures come in? What are they going to be doing?
And also, how is this going to coincide with the Lions tour? Because it's end of season, but then there used to be no Lions players in these Pro 14 teams versus no South Africa players. So it's going to be like Dragons 2s versus...
Well, this is the issue, isn't it?
Because, like, I don't know.
Well, this is the issue, isn't it? Because things like the Pro 14 and such pay parity to like ECPR, who also pay parity to World Rugby. So, but the Lions is its own separate thing.
Yeah.
So they don't give it. World Rugby doesn't give a shit about the Lions, really. They don't, because they're not making money off the Lions. The Lions is its own thing and it generates income in the towns. But what we need to realise and what rugby needs to realise is they should be trying to help these things and make them work and be part of it, because the Lions is the biggest money earner outside of the World Cup in rugby by a fucking mile.
Yeah.
The 4-year cycle when it happens in each of these countries is massive. It's huge for the South African economy. It's huge for the Australian economy. It's huge for the New Zealand economy. It's big for British fans traveling abroad, and even European fans maybe piggybacking on it as well. It's a huge, huge money spin. I'd probably say it's probably not that far off of the World Cup in terms of money making, because the attendances to the games are as big, if not bigger. So there's a lot of money in the Lions.
With the Lions as well, it's a guaranteed sellout or near to, I think, with whoever they're playing. Yeah. Like, you think of the World Cup, when you think of the New Zealand one, because obviously that's one of the Lions host countries. And when like Namibia played like Canada or something, they play at like Hawke's Bay, which is not a big ground, and there's maybe like 10,000 people there, and what's 15,000 seater or whatever. But people aren't there to watch it. But like the Lions, obviously, last time they went to New Zealand, they played the Super Rugby franchises, but it's a full house when they go. But you think of 2005 when the Lions played the province teams. Like, they played Manawatu when they were in the Div 2 before they restructured the NPC. Like, that's a huge game for that, like, that province. Like, and I think they lost by like 100 points, but I don't care. They got to play against the Lions, and Palmerston North gets a full house for a week. So it's win-win. I think what you've got to realise with rugby, it's a global community. It's unbelievable. Even like the brief time we've started this podcast, and like we've had minimal interaction really, but like I spoke to a very small number of people, and we've reached out to a couple of clubs and what have you around the world, and like there's a community in rugby that is global, and that's needs to be what's like prioritized by, I think, the powers that be, because obviously the Lions is something special, and that's what the fans care about. People want to see there, that's what makes memories. You know, the last tour was amazing. Like, Lions weren't really given much of a chance going into it, and they lost the first test. They win the second test, and it literally goes down to the last play of the game where it ends up being a draw, which, a bit of anticlimax, but like that is a pretty legendary thing. Like, 20 years, some people go, oh, remember that tour? That was great. But no one's going to go, oh, I remember when Eastern Province beat Newport in a shitty, wet night at Rodney Parade.
Which would happen.
Like, so...
Yeah, I agree, man. I agree.
Yeah, that's got to be prioritised over what... I mean, do the team stand to gain that much from this Rainbow Cup, really? Like, no one's going to watch it because they can't. I guess it's literally a tournament to play for the South Africans, but surely just making the Currie Cup a big deal is a better deal for them, surely.
Yeah, I think South Africa needs to reinvest in itself and, like, understand that kind of Australia and New Zealand don't need them in Super Rugby anymore. They've got a good product there now, the Trans-Tasman kind of thing. Like, they do like their own separate competitions, then have a knockout after that. It looks quite cool. It looks new and different. The fans seem to be enjoying it. Whereas, you know, like you said, those games sometimes traveling to play the Sharks or whatever just seems meaningless, because who's going to travel away? Whereas maybe a flight from, Auckland to Sydney makes sense, you know. Yeah. An hour and a half
thing. When I was out in Australia, I went to watch the Bledisloe Cup game in Sydney. And it wasn't the best game because it was pissing wet. It was 12-all, I think it finished. But then the guy I went to watch it with said, oh, do you want to go and watch it next week in Auckland? And I was like, sure, how much does it cost? But it's like, it's not that difficult to go, fuck it, do you want to go to New Zealand for a weekend to watch it? Because it is like a 2-3 hour flight.
If you live in Belfast, are you going to fly to Natal to watch Ulster play the Sharks? No, you're not. Yeah, it's just not.
Maybe once in a lifetime, like, you might go maybe once.
But would you save up your money and fly to watch the Lions play in South Africa this summer? You would.
Yes.
So I just see it a little bit like that. But anyway, enough slating that. Let's stick to the business.
Talk about what we actually said we were going to talk to 25 minutes ago.
Right. Tangent brought back in. We've pulled it back online a little bit. Back the go-kart is back on the track. We can go again. So basically, the rule changes for people who aren't aware of it. They're not changing. They're trialing these things, and they're interesting. So we'll give them the time they deserve. So captains will be allowed one challenge per game to review try scoring or foul play up to the 75th minute of the game. So let's say there's my team scores a try against Dave's team, but I think, Dav thinks that I high tackled one of his players to get a loose ball and we ran it in. He can challenge that with the referee. They can see what happened and actually go, yeah, do you know what? That try can't stand. We'll bring it back for a penalty. So that's number one. In the last 5 minutes, a captain can challenge any decision. So, so it could just be a knock on in the middle of the pitch or anything like that. As long as they've not made a previous challenge. So you can sort of save it up to challenge any decision in the last 5 minutes. In addition to that, when attackers are held up over the try line, instead of it being a 5 meter scrum to the attacking team as normal, the defending team will now do a dropout from their goal line. So a drop kick from their own goal line. It doesn't say whether it's under the posts or not. So I presume it can be anywhere along the goal line. And that rule will apply to in-goal knock-ons when defenders ground the ball from attacking kicks. So again, just if that ball gets kicked into there, kind of rugby league style, I guess. And last but not least, when a player is sent off, their team will be down to 14 men for 20 minutes. After that 20th minute, the team who's had a player sent off can replace him. So they can bring a sub on, if you will, get back to 15. So I guess let's cycle down then to start with. How do you feel? We'll do the challenges together because they're basically the same. How do you feel about the opportunity for a captain to challenge?
It sounds like it might be a little bit redundant to me. I mean, generally speaking, the TMOs are quite shit hot on most things. It's not like in football, there's a lot of talk about VAR being rubbish. Like, in generally speaking, in rugby, it's rare the TMOs get it wrong. And when it's contentious, it's because it is a really tight decision that's not too clear. I can't think of many examples where you might challenge it. Like, the only one that stands out in my mind is that Lions third test, where it's like, was it accidental offside or actually offside?
Scotland, Australia, World Cup 2015.
Yeah.
Same thing, you know.
That's it doesn't happen often. Is it just an invitation for some shithousery on the part of a captain to just break up the game?
Yeah, I've seen it used in Super Rugby Australia, what they're calling it. Someone did use it the other week, and it, you know, someone did get a high tackle in the lead up to a try, and they did just miss it because it wasn't obvious.
Yeah.
So it does work. But like you say, yeah, it is just a bit of shit hours, to be fair. Like, if my team scores against yours in the last sort of few minutes, are you just going to call it to try and put my kicker off? You know, like in American football, they call a timeout before a field goal sometimes to spook the kicker. Is it just going to do shit like that?
That's maybe just being a touch cynical, but that seems, in my mind, the most practical application for it is to put the other team off. Yeah. I just think, like, I mean, I don't know how it works. Like, I don't know, like, can you just, like, someone runs through and scores and you're just on the spot, just make them go, fuck it, I don't know, challenge, oh, he punched me in the face at the bottom of my ruck, like, and then you have to stop and look at it. I don't know. Do they have to have something specific? Can they just, or is it like the video ref where they have to ask a specific question, or can you just challenge it and they go, what are you challenging? And go, oh, fuck if I know, and make something up.
Well, it's kind of what happens already anyway, isn't it? Because you see it a lot of the time. Like, a lot of captains sort of go to the ref and go, oh, but, you know, that ruck back there, it was hands in. It wasn't, you know, they didn't turn
over. Yeah, that's it. And can
the
you...
referee goes, oh, well, we don't see.
So what, yeah, is that the kind of thing you can challenge? It says it's foul play, isn't it? Foul play and try scoring. But then it's like, surely if it's a try scoring thing and they're going to TMO anyway, the challenge is pointless. It's not like you can challenge the TMO that's just looked at it for 3 minutes. And foul play, I get, like, you can get punched and no one can see it. But then surely that, I feel like it's having one challenge for that, so it almost seems pointless. Like, surely if it's foul play, it's foul play. If you get punched, you can say, oh, I got punched in the face, no one saw it, have a look, and they do. Do you get your challenge back, like in cricket, if you're right? Or in tennis, it's the same as well. You get it if you're right and you get it back. I'm not against it, per se. I just don't see if it necessarily adds value to the game. if it's just open to abuse, maybe.
Yeah, interesting, but possibly useless. I think that's a good
thing. It's a bit like saying, like, oh, if you you get a try in the last minute of the game, in like a special zone, it's worth a billion points. It's almost, why add it? It's just stupid.
Yeah, why have the rest of the game?
Like, I don't know. I can't see it breaking any games, so I can't see it being a real issue.
Yeah,
it just seems like an added layer of fluff. That's it's there. Good for them.
How about this business of goal line dropouts instead of 5 meter scrums? I quite like this. It's a little bit rugby league. Well, it is rugby league, but
I mean, obviously, it's a trial. Perfect world for me would be to say have the option if you're the attacking team. So if you know you're shit at scrimmaging, they can kick it to us and we can run it back at them. Same if you've got a dominant scrum and you get an opportunity to then have a scrum and then you take it away from you, maybe you'd be annoyed. But then I guess if that's the rules and deal with it, we'll see how it plays out. I think it's a good way to get the game running, I guess, because you kick it from the drop out from the goal line. It's not so far it can go. I'd like to see a few like just snap drop goals from it. Someone puts a kick out, slot it straight back over their heads for three. That'd be a real fuck you to the other team.
Is it Mornay or Franstein who hit the one from like 60 meters for Racing like years ago?
I think it was Franstein, was it? The monster boot. Mornay Stein used to score about 7 million drop goals a game, and Franstein just had a monster boot on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it could definitely create some exciting moments. I think it's probably better of getting the game going than it's having scrums that reset over and over again. So I think that could be a good idea. I think it's a trial. See how it goes. If it's really, really good, then it's going to fuck scrums off. They're boring. If it doesn't add an awful lot, I think the option's a good idea. So you're not forced to have a scrum if it's going to be bad. But
the option. I actually had a question about the scrum, which I might ask in a second, but I don't want to get into like an hour of scrummaging. So you can just tell me snap whether you think it's a bad or good idea. But last trial rule then is this: the player being sent off 20 minutes, then you can bring someone else on. Everyone's kind of mentioned this before, haven't they? This has been spoken about a lot, like an orange card kind of thing or whatever, haven't they? Like, oh, you can replace the person after 15 minutes or something like, or if it's not a foul play red card, if it's just like poor technique more than like someone being dirty, can you just replace them or something like that? You know, it's interesting. Again, we'll see how it pans out. I think kind of in a way, I think if your player has punched someone or something like that, I don't think you should be able to replace them. Do you know what I mean? If someone's done
something
pretty dirty, like we said before, I don't mind a bit of like roughhousing in front of punches, but if someone Julian White someone and fucking decks them and like knocks them out and probably gives them onset CTE, you probably don't want the team who's done that to be able to replace him in 20 minutes because you can just be, I think it'll encourage teams to be really negative for 20 minutes. You know what I mean? Yeah, you have the 10-minute sim bin and teams are very negative. It's like, oh, don't, you know, we've got to keep the ball and you pick and go for like 8 minutes. Do you know what I mean? So it could probably just set that a little bit more, which I guess is a bit of a challenge. Like, can you keep that up for 20 minutes? Probably not. So,
I mean, they say, what is it for the average score for a sim bin is 7 points, which, to be honest with you, I don't know if that's been fact checked in the last 15 years because they've been saying that for about as long as I've watched rugby. I think it's a good, I think the idea is good. Like you say, for foul play, like proper foul play, like violence, I guess, what you would quote call in football violent conduct, I think you should be off for the game. Like you think, let's say, with someone's deck somebody. Or there was that one a few years ago. Jamie Heaslip was playing for Ireland. He's New Zealand, needs someone in the head. Red card. I think was it Paul Buxton kicked the fuck out of somebody playing for Gloucester in the Challenge Cup?
No, Andy Hazel. Absolutely. That was it. It was against Monde Marsan. That was the team in the Challenge Cup.
Yeah, it was in the Challenge Cup for sure. Yeah. And he filled someone in. Like, yeah, you can't.
That was brutal. Like
He threw two
knees from like side control, man. That's horrible.
Yeah. Or, you know, the famous Duncan McGray just beating the shit out of Rowan O'Gara, which is probably still my favourite Lions moment ever. that's a red card. You can't come back on for that. But like you say, like a high shot where
these shit red cards we're seeing, you know.
Yeah, like, and that makes sense. Maybe I'd lean towards 15 to 20 minutes and then you get subbed, but that's, I think, a better solution than, you know, a slightly, like you say, missed technique to then it, your team's chances are then heavily impacted for 70 minutes because of it. So I think it's a good idea, but there has to be still something in place for proper red cards, quote unquote.
Wicked. Like that. I agree, mate. So I'm just going to throw this out there and I just want you to reply. Let's not get into a big tour back because we could be here all fucking night. But I just want to throw this out because I was talking about this with someone today, actually, watching our juniors play. I was talking to one of the coaches of our junior team afterwards and we were discussing like the scrum and stuff like that. Now, with the scrum, obviously, at the moment, it is pooey. We all know that's poo. It's absolute poo. When it was touch, pause, engage, it was okay. It was all right. That worked a little bit. How would you feel about like a Super League set? So, you know, in the Super League, they literally just come in and load up, and they don't push anymore, but they used to be able to push, didn't they? So literally, they just come in, they bind up and engage straight away. There's no pushing until the ball's in, then you could push. Do you think that would work better for the scrum? Because I saw last week and this week, Tigers have won like 15 or 16 penalties at scrum time. And it's literally just because they're binding, they're holding. And then on the second set, they've already half lost their bind anyway. So they're actually setting. They just fall down. And literally like Bath just were on their knees. And it must have been like five penalties or so at scrum that Tigers got today. And last week, they got 10 odd against Newcastle. How would you feel about just a straight engage? You got to hold it. If one team's pushing the other way, you free kick it as you normally would. But then the ball's got to come in. A little bit like, kind of like, you know, like back in the day when they used to just pack up and hit each other, like in the 90s. Well,
the front row's got there and he just got in.
A little bit like that, but more organised.
I think with rugby league, I'm not 100% sure on the rules because I'm pretty sure you can push. You're allowed to feed so the defending team doesn't bother pushing because they're not going to win the ball.
Unless you want to start a brawl, I think, and then you push.
Yeah. I remember because when I was out in Australia watching a game, and I believe it was Canberra Raiders did it, because it was either Canberra or the Rabbits, because it was a team blazing green. They put a push on and they turned the ball over and scored because the scrum was on like 5-10 meters out from the opposition's line. And I thought, okay. I thought you can't push. And they go, oh, no, you can, just no one ever does. So I think maybe you allow feeding to the extreme extent, but the problem with, I think, with rugby union compared to rugby league is that scrummaging is obviously a key part of what makes it the game it is. If you take that away, and I know we've spoken about this in the past, saying, oh, you don't want like these massive bastards playing prop who can only play for 50 minutes. And it takes away the advantage of that size. So maybe you get that, you know, you get a free flowing game, you get fitter players who aren't 155 kilos. That are smashing into each other. But there is a technical element to scrimmaging as someone who's played prop my entire life and someone who's half decent at it, despite not necessarily being much bigger than any people have been playing against, or certainly not stronger than most people have played against, but you know, being able to best them. I would be against like it was just quick and over and done with. I think you've just got to, I don't know, there's got to be a way to stop people just going to their knees.
Yeah,
maybe so what, I don't know what the solution is.
Yeah, I want to make it more of a tug of war rather than like a wrestle. You know, when you, like people are wrestling, they're like wrestling for position and jockeying. I want to see literally just let's get in there, let's come in. Yep, we're ready. Both front rows happy, both second rows are right. Just come together, and then when the referee like says go or like ball in, that's when you can start pushing. So it becomes we're actually in straight away, and then it's. As soon as that ball's in, we're pushing. Because that way, if there is a dominant team, they will just fucking shove the other team back naturally. Or if it's a match, they'll just match. And then whoever hooks it, hooks it.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know. That specific solution to me sounds like it's either going to be an absolute mess or it's going to just, like I say, it's going to take away scrimmaging from the game as it is. And it's... Well, then do you just have essentially a front row that's just not like a traditional front row and you just have slimmer blokes because they don't need to be big? I don't know. Does it take away too much of what makes rugby union rugby union? Is that necessarily a bad thing? Because, I mean, let's be honest, no one wants to watch scrum resets over and over again. It's hard to judge with a different league. So the MLR is not as good as you know, obviously Premiership Rugby, Heineken Cup Rugby, they only have one reset, and then it's just whatever. I'm not actually sure what they do. Is it a play on, or is it a penalty, or what? But
National League and below reffing.
Yeah, you can't keep resetting it and resetting it and resetting it. To be fair, you watch Super Rugby, they don't tend to get bogged down in penalties. I think certainly in the Premiership, teams go hunting for penalties. I think they look for it. They don't look to use the scrum to play the ball. So I think maybe it's a culture thing that's the problem. Because I think it's a professional level, certainly. I think...
Yeah, it's definitely less a problem in games that I've played in.
Yeah, grassroots games, generally, you want to use the ball. And because normally, refs won't give you a penalty no matter how dominant you are and how much the other team gets folded in and tries to cheat. And also, scrum halves will pass the ball when you're on top anyway and moving forward, because all they know is to pass the ball out.
Or your number eight.
And then someone drops it.
Or your number eight's a fame-hungry bastard and just picks it straight away.
Yeah, picks it far too early when you could... He could just drop over the line, but no, he wants to trundle in from 10 yards and take three with him, so he picks it up.
It's held best up thing by seen, class.
Best thing I've ever seen was in a scrum. I think it was the opposition scrum on their 5-meter line. We turned it over, rolled them back over the line, and the eight dropped it over the line. All he had to do was drop on the ball and he scored. And he fumbled it. But I think it's mainly like a culture problem. I think teams are hunting penalties. They're not just looking to restart the game. So I think the way it is can work. I don't think you have to just get rid of scrums or change them too dramatically. But it's worth trying, I think. I think certainly some of these leagues, like the MLR and the Top League and the Super Rugby, has always been quite experimental with their rules. Mm. I think trying that, maybe trying radically changing the scrum and see how it works, but okay, it kind of goes against that thing of rugby's for all shapes and sizes, maybe.
Okay, yeah, I get you. Last question on this before we move on to our main topic, because I feel like this is going to be a long episode, but I think this kind of needs to be a long episode with the main topic we're covering anyway, because there's a lot to say. And obviously, we've got to round up our MLR. Big fans of that. But last question right then, though, Dav. Touch, pause, engage, or crouch, bind, set? Which one?
I've only played senior rugby, played men's rugby when it's been crouch, touch, pause. No, crouch, bind, set. Sorry, got there in the end. I think crouch, bind, set is better for the technical scrummager. I think you could, when it was crouch, touch, pause, engage, it was all about the hit and being dominant on the hit. And I think the problem you would get is that you'd have the engage. If you didn't win the hit, you just drop down. And it's a reset. And that became too much of a problem. I think with crouch, bind, set, you don't, until the ball's in, you kind of don't know a bit more. I personally prefer what it is now than what it was, but I don't know. I didn't play senior rugby when it was the old way, so I couldn't compare them as such. I think it's a more of a technical battle than it's just like, how much does each pack weigh smashing into each other from 20 yards away? So I prefer the new rules.
So yeah, our main topic for tonight, anyway, moving on to that, is just looking at really the RFU sort of suggestions, the sort of plan they've laid out for the community game. So what we're trying to do tonight in probably the next hour or so tops is put the community game, the grassroots game, to rights and set it straight, really. Hey, Dav, we're trying to fix it because it's a bit, not broken, but it's a bit limping. It's like a dog with a bit of a bust leg. Do we chop it off and grow a new one, or do we get it a wheel? What do we do? How do we fix this dog?
I think it could be better, couldn't it? I think that's probably where we're at with it. It's not, like I say, it's not broken, but it's, yeah, it definitely could be improved. And they're making an attempt, so credit to the RFU for trying. It's not the clearest plan so far, but I think it's like an initial proposal.
We'll
go through it and see what we think.
So basically the so there's recommendations in it. So what they've already agreed, the RFU Council have already agreed, a target date set for FCS implementation of season 2022-23. Not worried too much about that. The size of leagues at level 5 and below are going to be capped to 12, and levels 3 and 4 capped to 14. So that's going to change. So, for example, looking at level 5 and below, that's going to be like your Midlands Premier and below, effectively, if we're talking about Midlands Rugby, you know, South Premier and below, North Premier and below. So, you know, Midlands 1, that kind of level, that's going to be capped at 12 teams, which is obviously going to see you having a 22-game season rather than 26. And levels 3 and 4, which is our National 1 and National 2 level, are going to be capped at 14. So that will be down from 16. So again, 26 games instead of 30. So there's going to be sort of, you know, freedom there. All levels, there's going to be a two-week break over Christmas and some weekend breaks at points to be confirmed. Knockout competitions at national level will be introduced per level from level 5 down with optional entry for teams. And a rapid review of the structure will take place every 3 years. So that's what's already been agreed. And what we're looking at to sort of be agreed exactly is the exact structure of things. But that's kind of the bones of it overall to start with. There's a lot of details on here which are very confusing. And I think, first off, we're going to slant this document a little bit. Very confusingly written. It's very all over the place from the RFU, I'm not going to lie. Weird, isn't it?
I mean, I'm not a fantastic reader. I can read, but that's about as good as it gets. It's making me like I put myself stupid. I'm not stupid, I'm just dyslexic. It's a wall of text which doesn't seem to say an awful lot. And then there's a loads of really, really unhelpful images that have got like mock-up divisions, but they don't seem to be organized along like regional lines. It just says what level they're at, and then it's a bunch of teams. It looks like they asked like the intern to just ram something together and they didn't check it and they just pushed it out. It's sloppily done from the RFU. I will say
it's not. Yeah, it's just like you say. It's just a little bit iffy, really, isn't it? It seems like it seems like they're making decisions that, oh yeah, this team's going to go into this new sort of Premier level. This team's going to go into like new National League, and this team's going to come down. But these relegations happened like pre-COVID. Who knows where these teams are at now? Do you know what I mean? Like, a lot of teams are on the verge of folding potentially at this rate. So it seems a little bit like, oh well, this is what's going to happen here. So like, you know, I've seen my clubs that I'm coaching is randomly going to drop down a level. We stayed up pre-COVID before I got here, obviously, but they stayed up, and now all of a sudden they're going to be put into like a new level 7.
The Dan Woods legacy. You've relegated and you've not even had a season yet.
Hamstrung, not even kicked a ball in anger. And they're going to sort of pause. But this is why, you know, this is the thing that we don't, you know, get, like we've both said earlier when we sort of spoke about this before we got on air, if you will, before we got on recording. It's a little bit confusing with regard to, yeah, they just seem to be kicking stuff about. And then the other thing we took real umbrage with was like the cup competitions. They're saying, yeah, let's get a national cup back. I got really excited. I was like, yes, the old school national cup, which we've all heard stories about. My pops tells me about how Nuneaton got to play Saints once in the old national cup back in like the 90s, early 2000s. They went and lost like 106-0 or something like that. But still, like, what a day out for the players to go and play a big club at Franklin's Gardens and all that. So, and, you know, we heard about the old school National Cup for the Colts. I remember your brother was part of a really good run for Hinckley, wasn't he? And stuff like that. They won it,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, they won it, yeah, at Franklin's Gardens. That was a few years ago now.
But you hear about those things, I was excited. And then I scroll down the page and it's pool stages for a National Cup. Just felt a bit rubbish. Yeah. Everything on here just feels a little bit RFU to me. They're trying to overcomplicate things.
It's a little bit like, you know, that episode of Friends when Joey's hosting a game show and it's the most convoluted mess.
Bamboozled.
Let's play Bamboozled. It's like that. There seems to be more competitions.
You know what, that's actually a really good analogy. Sorry, that's a really good analogy, because, you know, and this is how I look at this overall. I think we'll really get into it. We're going to give our opinion, because people need to go out and read this themselves. Because like we said, there's it's 63 pages long, and most of it's just diagrams of this bloody cup, how it's going to look with pool stages and that, examples. A load of shite, in my opinion. Let's keep it simple. But this is how the analogy works, right? So that episode of Friends, Bamboozle's great. And you know, he goes at the end of the episode, he loves the game now. And he's like, oh, pick a Wicked Wango card. They said, no, didn't you get the memo? We've scrapped it. It's not going to be. He's like, what, the Wheel of Fortune's gone, all this stuff? And they're like, yeah, now it's just going to be girls in bikinis holding up the scores, and it's going to be a simple question answer game. And he's like, let's play Bamboozle. He loves it. Why can't we do this with rugby? Why can't we just, the metaphor, not saying let's have women in bikinis about everywhere, because it's not a great look. The Sharks did it for a while in Super Rugby. You know, say what you will. But let's just keep it simple. A little bit of razzmatazz, simple. Let's not have pool stages for knockout competitions. Let's not say, oh, this team's going to get promoted to this level and that, because we want to try and keep Hinkley at kind of a National 2 level, even though it's not going to be National 2 anymore, or because they finished 7th in the league last year, they're going to go into this level of it. It's very confusing, very messy. I think let's have more localised leagues. Let's have more playoffs. Let's have a National Cup competition with straight knockout. And a bit more, you know, finals at Twickenham or at Welford Road, wherever, bigger stadiums. And let's actually make rugby at that level fun again, because it's been a real slog, 30-game slog for the last few years. And if you play county, if you're good enough, fair play, it's like a 35-40-game slog every season. And you're not getting paid a lot, even if you're paying at National 2 level. You're doing it for the love of the game. So let's get some love back in it. Let's be simple, flashy, but simple, instead of complex crap to look good, you know? I think,
like you say, you want more big games. One thing I think a few teams have done, I think both of us, or you've probably moved down, but our clubs have done Friday night games over the last couple of years, and they were quite a big hit. You get a bumper crowd. There's a different atmosphere with a nighttime game as well. And like, okay, you can't do like necessarily midweek games or whatever, guaranteed for for grassroots games, but like you can do it. You can have a bit more fun with it. I think having localized games is better. I think because the plan is they're doing, it's making the leagues a little bit smaller. For me personally, I think just entirely outside of the professional game, so championship downwards, I think they should make it more regionalized. The world, like as it is now, it's not like 30 years ago where the league is sort of first kind of started. All the way down. And it was kind of maybe a big deal to go and like for us, okay, Leicestershire to go and play, we're going to play Luctonians up in Stoke-on-Trent, about as far away as you can go for an away day in the Midlands. Kind of maybe a novelty. It's like, oh, we went there, we did it in our own backyard. And you have those stories and like that kind of novelty now. People are like working longer hours. There's more to do at the weekend, so people are a bit more distracted. I think less people are playing rugby, so it's not like you have three teams all go on a bus and go on an away trip anymore. Yeah. You've got first and seconds going to different places. You get a bare bones. You get like a first team squad. You get most clubs do struggle to get a second team squad out. They might get a 15, 16, 17 out. There's more of a disconnect between like Colts and senior rugby than there used to be. I think.
Oh God, yeah.
I don't think the way the modern grassroots game is can stick to the model it used to be. We've had for the last sort of 25-ish years.
Clubhouses are not full of guys swilling pints of bitter anymore. It's just not the same anymore. Like,
there's more
going on. There's Instagram. There's fucking massive flat screen curved tellies. There's cooler stuff going on.
Yeah,
you know, guys want to spend their Saturday night with the missus and stuff like that now. And it's a hard, imagine like, I'm not married, I don't have kids, but I can only imagine how difficult it is schedule wise. And obviously dealing with, you know, your wife and the lifestyle for guys to be able to say, oh, you know, every Saturday this month we're playing, I'm traveling 2 hours there, 2 hours back. So I'm not going to be home till like 9 o'clock at night. And I'll probably fancy going for a skinful with the lads after that, because it is a long day and we've probably had a tough game. But on that point you made about Luctonians, which is interesting, and this kind of echoes your point a little bit, the other year they came to us, we put 60 on them, we went to their place, they put 60 on us. What does that tell you? It's all in the journey. So what's the point? Who wants to travel? No, and we're bagging Luctonians just because we both know, because we've played them.
Well, it's just geographically, why do I want to travel far away?
Why do I nearly want to travel 3 hours on a Saturday morning, have to be at the club at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning to travel, to play a game? You're not ready for it. You're not up for it. You've been sat on a coach for 3 hours. It's not comfortable. I'm not being paid to be there. In most cases, you're paying to be there because you're paying a membership to the club and subs.
Yeah.
So I think we've relied too much on guys' love for the game. Clubs have a responsibility, I think, to create a fun, inviting atmosphere, which a lot of clubs do really well. But now it's about creating an atmosphere where guys can flourish athletically as well, because it's not enough anymore to just have a good pint on the tap and, you know, have a bit of a social, because you can't, that doesn't work every week anymore.
I mean, you think the pre-league games, or pre-league days, sorry, back in, you know, the super amateur days when, like, even the best players that would play for, like, for Leicester or whatever, they'd have that sort of, not professional, the big clubs out there, a little ring. But then, like, the Leicestershire teams, for our example, would mostly play each other. And there'd be certain, like, friendship fixtures that you'd have with other clubs in the area, so, like, or rivalry games. So, you know, these pretty big clubs would go and play someone a little bit further away. You'd have club teams that would go on a tour, and a trip was a big deal. When the league started now, and like you say, it's a regular thing, it's a yearly fixture to go out and play someone really far away. If you're unlucky with how the lines get drawn, all of your away games are really far away.
Well, do you remember Hinkley the other year being drawn in when they first got up to Nat 2, being in Nat 2 South, and it was like Jersey away when Jersey were coming up? Like that on a how was, like, someone who works a 9-to-5, is that like an achievable thing for a weekend? Got to take time off work and stuff like that. It's difficult, man.
I think a national league system for me is just, and even just in the Midlands, and you think of how difficult it is. Like I said, the South West leagues, in theory, you've got Oxfordshire all the way down to the tip of Cornwall. And okay. Only in Southwest One is that going to, or Southwest Prem, is that necessarily going to be a problem? But that's still such a long way to go for what is ultimately a hobby, and it's not like it's a once a year occurrence. Like, you've got lots of away games that are really far away, and you want rugby, you want it to be like just a nice release. When I used to coach the kids in Australia, I used to basically, because we've had a bit of a problem with, like, parents being kind of like, well, we're not winning enough money there. And my approach to it was basically, like, the reason I'm coaching these kids is because it's a fun thing to do. That's an escape from school twice a week in the week to then go and do something fun on a Saturday. Mm. And, I mean, that, I think, is a good thing. And that's really what adults need as well. It's, they just need an escape from work twice a week or once a week, depending on how often you train. And somewhere that's, you know, it's a local game at the weekend. I think I would be all for binning off the whole idea of a national league system and just have, like the county unions we have, and just having them have a competition. I know that probably won't be too popular, but I think semi-professionalism is not necessarily a good thing. We can get into that a little bit later, a bit more, but I think you almost want to get away from that. People playing for £200 a week to go and play in these leagues and not really care. You almost want to have guys who play for the local team, and if that, you've got a good team that year, you might win the county cup, you might win that league, and keep the national cup with it. So you want your week in, week out rugby, your league rugby has got to be as simple as possible. And then you add that, like we say, with those maybe more playoffs or cup competitions, is where you add the flair and the excitement and those one-off big games where you go here, there and everywhere, is how I think it should be done.
Okay. Well, I think for me, the National League's got to stay, because that's kind of like your gateway. You know, that there's guys who have played national rugby who've then gone on to play Premiership and stuff like that, because they've had that high level of competition. And I think that's what the National League gives. So, like, let's take, for example, you know, who does well in National Leagues? I don't know. Let's just say Darlington and Maldon Park, they're always a great example because they've got quite a good setup, really. In general, they do quite well. Or Richmond or someone like that who sort of bounces between the Championship. That they, if that club was put into like a divisional, like a regional league, it'd be boring. They'd win every single game every year. So I like the idea of having this National League at the top. And I think, because we're looking at level three down, let's say National One and then National Two, I like the idea of those. And then I think below there, we need to look a little bit more regional. And everyone will go, yeah, but then the quality, you've just sort of shot yourself in the foot at the same point. But what I'm saying from there is you go a little bit more like American football style. So you know how you see like with college football, you'll be like in your divisions, like you read, like you say, the regions. So maybe the University of Michigan will play Rutgers, who they'll put 50 on. But Rutgers will have a game where they'll win a few games as well. But let's just say, but if you win those 10 games in your division, you then go to the playoffs. So that's how I think these leagues should work. They should make them smaller and more localized. And yes, if you've got one team who is far and away better than everyone else. So let's say we've got four, let's just use Southwest for a minute. Let's say we've got National 2 South. And then below that, we've got four divisions, right? Which are all of the same level. Top two teams from each of those four divisions go into the playoffs, right? The quarterfinal, semifinal, final. The team who wins that goes straight up to National 2 South and swaps with the team that finished rock bottom. The team that finished second, the runners-up, so the guys who lost the playoff final, play against the team that finished second bottom in National 2 South in a player relegation playoff game. So because you lost the playoff final, you're sort of kind of punishment is you have to beat the team who aren't, you know, quite, and that way you create more jeopardy. Do you know what I mean? I think that's a really good solution to it. Mm-hmm. So you have these regional level leagues, but then that's how you get into, you know, to the levels above that. And then you can have below those four leagues that are all the same level. If there is a tier below that, you same thing with that tier below. Maybe you just have the teams that finish top of those tiers below swap with the team that finishes bottom. Do you know what I mean? So you kind of have it like that. So you still have relegation and progression, but in order to get into National 2, it's a little bit more difficult and it's a little bit more, you have to sort of show that quality. So yes, your division might be quite weak compared to Division 4 of your level, but you've got to beat the team that finishes top of that to get to the level. Do you see what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. I think that's like that kind of idea, I think, works well. I genuinely do question whether or not National 2 is a level as it stands anyway. I know that is that the talk in making that 4 instead of 2, or am I making that up?
No, so level, yeah, so they're gonna have three leagues,
so like a north south central thing,
which I think that's a good move to start with, though, because that'll save teams like Hinckley having to travel 2 or 3 hours, or you know, Leicester Lions having to travel down to the tip of Cornwall, like you said, if they are in the South Division by chance.
Because I think for me that makes sense. I don't think having those clubs having to travel so far is sensible. I think it makes sense to maybe have that sort of like semi-elite level where it's, I guess, semi-professional as that good stepping stone where you get the likes of, you know, maybe academy kids on loan or young players, professional potential players playing a good standard week in, week out. I think that's a positive move. Like I said, I think it's a good thing, the idea of having like a regional conference that you can win year in, year out, but if you don't necessarily get promoted.
Yeah, you have to win your playoff.
Yeah, I think you see you've got to win your playoff. I think that's a decent idea. Because I mean when I said I think I'm not too keen on the idea of a national league structure, I don't mean like the national leagues that are called that. I mean, they're part of it, I guess, but I just think all the way down, like, you know, like how it currently is split up, and you might play a team that's, you know, even at mid-5 levels, what's that, level 9, 10, you're still going to have the odd game that's like an hour and a half away.
Well, like you said before, the Midland stretches from literally like Chesterfield, pretty much, like just below Sheffield.
Well, it's like
all the way to Cambridgeshire.
It's Stoke to, like Peterborough or even further south, like Cambridgeshire. It's a relatively big area, and Southwest is, again, it's obviously it's a big place, as I said earlier. I think almost would you get below a certain level, maybe like you say you have that, like let's say the South, or each three blocks is split into the same, maybe 4 sub-tiers, but then below that level even maybe, it's really regional. As someone who's played for, say, mid-1 club in Leicestershire, is the last one I played for, really that level, though, do you want to go and play teams in, like, Northamptonshire or, say, further north than that, say, Notts Links and Derby Way, hour and a half trip? Not really. You probably, everyone would much prefer if there was like, well, there's the Leicestershire Conference. So say the good, the big teams, the likes of Hinckley and Loughborough Uni, that are going to be in this almost like national, like elite tier, and say someone in the Midlands area, or someone like Cov or Moseley, that are, they are going to be too good to play against certain smaller clubs. But then you have, say, these like the county leagues, and like there's about 12, 14 clubs, whatever there is in Leicestershire. I think that would work well as well. That's your year in, that's your week in, week out rugby. If you win that league, you win that league. Good, you're playing them again next year anyway, but you're playing for fun. Like, and then you have that national cup structure then, which I think you can add that more competition where you go, okay, we're the best team in here. Say, you know, in this county, you know, we're the best team in Somerset, let's say, or whatever. I think Somerset's got its own union. I'm not too outside of Leicester. I don't know exactly who's got.
We've got what, Southwest we'll Rugby, which is the overall overall body, but there'll be like, you know, the Somerset RFU.
Yeah. So, well, you would know there'll be a Devon team that, and a Devon RFU that runs, like, I don't know if you have a county cup. They seem to have died away, but I think that's it. A county cup thing that means something, I think, is a good idea. I think having like that national cup is a good idea, so that you know that you're going to, even if you know you're going to walk your leagues per se in that regional section, you know that you've got your cup campaign, or you want to be able to go all the way to Twickenham. That's the real deal, because you need, ultimately, what you're looking to provide is a fairly competitive week in, week out structure that everyone can play in. I don't think we really have that. I think, like, if you want to play good rugby or a higher standard, you've got, some players either have to sell their soul a little bit and go after a bit of cash, or travel a long way to play. And in, there is, it's almost, if you're a good player who, you know, likes their local club, has a lot of mates down their local club, but they're too good for that level, and they, you know, they also have to move on. I think if you have it more of a localized league, and you know that you only play in 16 games a season, you're probably happy to play for your local team. And then if you might, you know, get to Twickenham, then that's great. Or you might win the Leicestershire or the Midlands Cup.
Yeah. Then, this is the point that I'm making with, like I say, having those sort of four, like they're saying here, like they're talking about level five, which is obviously the one below the national leagues, like national two. They're talking about having sort of six leagues across those banners up from four. So, you know, instead of having, you know, Southwest Prem, Midlands Prem, et cetera, they're going to have, you know, more of them. So I think that makes more sense to have more of those divisions. And then, yeah, but then they talk about having 12 at level six, so like your Midlands one level and onwards, like that kind of level is going to have like 12 leagues, which I think is great. So I think the idea of having, like you say, more localized and stuff, that makes, just makes way more sense, because for one, it's going to get, and I like the RFU angle on it. They have said, you know, it's going to be, the reason why they're doing these things is to increase participation numbers, make it more happy for, you know, more happy and healthy and friendly for people and stuff like that. So I think the angle we've worked there makes sense in terms of having, you know, a set of leagues underneath the national leagues. The national leagues will always be your premier level, and that's something for the teams to chase. And again, if you can make it into the championship from there, awesome. And then if there is relegation and promotion for the Prem, and you can do a Chiefs and get to that level, fantastic. We're absolutely buzzing for you. And that's what I want to see happen. But I think having this setup will make that even more realistic, if anything, because it's going to be, you can't just get promoted to that level because you play in a relatively weak league. Because who's to say that 1 year Midlands Prem or the Northern Prem or Southwest Prem might be really weak, and a team just goes up because they've pumped a load of money in, but then that money goes the next season, they get relegated. This way, if you have smaller divisions, yes, you might go 14-0 in your division, but now you've got to beat another team who's gone 14-0 in the playoffs. So it adds more jeopardy to the games, and it means that you have to be on your top, and it means that you've got a bit more to work towards. And for one, it's more entertaining for players, from my angle anyway. I love the idea of more playoffs and a quarterfinal, semi-final, rather than, oh, lads, we've won 26 games in the league this year, up we go. That's great, and everyone loves a good league win and stuff like that. But I like jeopardy. I like risk, and I like that kind of pit of your stomach, a bit of sickness, knowing it all rides on this one game. So it doesn't matter if you've won 14 in a row in the league, all your bonus points and that, you've still got to go and beat the team who've done the same in another subdivision. Do you know what I mean? I like that angle. And like you say, the local part of the league makes more sense to begin with because it's easy for you guys. And then if you know for the playoffs, you've only got to make maybe two or three bigger journeys for the quarters and semis, etc. And maybe if you have your finals day at a neutral venue, how great is that? So yeah, that's kind of cool there with the actual league structure. But then I like you said, we can chuck in there having a national cup, just a straight FA Cup style knockout. It can be national one downwards. It's your option if you want to enter. So if there's a national one club who are really pushing to get promoted to the championship this year and they go, look, let's not enter this national cup this year. We don't want to. Cool. Don't enter. But the option's there. So maybe, just maybe, a small club could have a big game against a national one club if they work hard and they get through the national cup. And that way you're always ever only going to have. So if you have a really good year in your little league, say it's going to be 12 teams. So you play 22 games in your league, 26 games with a quarter, semi-final and final. If you do, you know, win those playoffs to get promoted to national two. And then let's say you know, there's like 8 games in the FA Cup of rugby and you get to Twickenham and have a big day out against the national one club. Yes, you've played a 34 game season, but that's because of success rather than you playing this many games. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's how well you do rather than you're playing 30 games a season and that's that because this is how many games you have to play.
Well, I think my idea of that kind of like that local, more localized league, I think you probably don't want like your actual week in, week out to be maybe more than 10 teams. I think what was that, like an 18 games, 18 league games?
Yeah, well, we could make it that small for sure, I think.
Or even, and I think you do it that way and then you maybe have like that end of season playoffs can just be like you're the regional champion, like,
yeah, add a bit more to it, like I say, like, yeah, American football style where, you know, the high schools and stuff like that, they go, oh yeah, do you remember when we won state? And it's like, but yeah, you know, they play like teams in the bumfuck nowhere and they go like 8-0 in their little division. Yeah. But all that means is, well, yeah, you've proven that you're the best in your area in, let's say, Jefferson County and where the fuck that is, in Texas or wherever, I don't know. But now you've got to go and beat the teams from Houston. Do you know what I mean? Because that team's qualified and they've shown they're the best. And if you win that, you're the state champion. And all that does is it means that you now go and play in the national. You're in like the quarterfinal of the national playoffs. So you end up playing 20-odd games a season, but it's down to your success rather than your... So if you finish mid-table in your subdivision, like we're talking about here, you've played, 18 league games, you've won 9, lost 9, you're 50-50 team, that's your season done. But you've still got maybe the National Cup, maybe you've had a bit of a cup run, you know, you maybe got to like the last 32 or something like that. Great, we had a good season, guys. We had a big day out at this team. You know, we had a couple of busloads of people went because it was a bigger game and all that. Whereas who the fuck wants to ride a bus to watch you go and play this team away in the league? Because there's nothing riding on it. It's just 4 league points and possibly a bonus. That's only your diehards will go and watch that, you know. Whereas if it was a big cup game, we'll go.
I've been lucky enough to play in some pretty big games. I've played at Twickenham in the Junior Vars final for Rugby Lions. But like the cup run for that was unreal. We were in mids five at the time because it was when they just reformed after going bust. They had that year of playing friendlies and the year I joined, they were playing bottom of the ladder. And we'd win like 90-0 every weekend. And there was like the Lions, like every club has their core supporters. They're normally a lot of their ex-players or, you know, whatever. The guys were there every week. But then when we got to the big rounds and we got to like the Midlands quarters, semi-finals, we had big crowds. Remember the Midlands final, we played away at Long Buckby. I doubt anybody who's listening has been to Long Buckby Rugby Club. It's not a big place. It's got like 2 pitches. It's just like good old fashioned, like a couple of rails down the side of each side of the pitch. But it was rammed. There was a barbecue going. Like they had a big day out. There was like bounty castles for kids. Probably, I'd say, 1,000 people there watching. Ended up being a really, really good game. Went to extra time. We won in extra time. But when we won that Midlands Cup, then we had the national semi-final. We played Goole from Yorkshire. We played them at home. Again, probably easily 1,500 people there. Big day out. I don't know if anyone's ever been to Webb Ellis Road where Rugby Lions play, but like it's got a stand. It's not big, but like It's got a nice clubhouse, like the former National League club, really good facilities. They've got like a stadium announce system that was going like music when we score, music when we walked out onto the pitch, like the announcer calling out everyone's name, like when something happened when we scored, like, as I say, 1,500 people singing, like they bang the share. There's a real big atmosphere. It's unreal. And okay, maybe Rugby Lions is a special case because of the history of the club, but you're going to get more of that playing like at grassroots level if you've got like, oh, it's the cup final. Like, unless this year, we are quite lucky, I guess, they play the County Cup final at Welford Road. It's been a bit less competitive in the last sort of 10, 15 years, I think, compared to what it used to be, because National League clubs don't play it anymore. But it is it's a big day out. My team, I was injured, so I couldn't play, but my team got to the final one year. So it was, you know, everybody goes out to Welford Road. It's on the Crumbly Terrace, and it's a really good day. They used to have the Colts final that before it, still do. It's a really good day out for those clubs. You get more of that. If that's like not an off chance that happened, that's like, that's your aim every year. You know, you've got, if you do well, you've got a short season. And if you win that, then you know you've got big like playoff games. You can market that. I'm sure Rugby Lions and Long Buckby made more money off those 2 days than they probably made off the rest of the year from
the entire season of like Saturdays with 50 people turning up and, you know, having a few pints of bitter.
Everybody who's playing, probably their family coming, extended family members coming, everybody who might possibly go would go, like all the sponsors.
Well, like you said as well, mate, those Friday night games were bigger in the last couple of years. The IFU really pushed them. Now, those Friday night games are only doable if the games are close enough, because it's too difficult to rock up. And like you say, you might even be able to get the odd Wednesday night game in there if, you know, if there's no Saturday game coming, if it's a bye week or whatever, and two teams decide they want to play their game on the Wednesday night instead of the Saturday that week. I don't know. You know, there's options there. I think more close proximities allow that to happen. And there's not to say that, like, you know, the teams that are these level above, the teams that are already in that two and that now, fair crack on. And then all we're going to do, in my opinion here, is just let's get these other teams just dispersed across. Like, so let's have National 2 South, then let's have four divisions below that, which are like the equivalent of like Southern Premier, like we've got at the moment, like Southwest Prem or whatever we've got, or North Prem, whatever it is at the moment. Let's have four that are equivalent to that level. Smaller divisions like 8, 8, 8, 8. So that's what, 8, 16, 20, 32 teams across four divisions, which we've kind of got at the moment, where we've got like, normally have like an East and West, don't you? Like you have Midlands one East and West, or Midlands Prem East or West, whatever. But let's split that across like four leagues there. And then, like I say, the top two from each of those divisions go into the playoffs to be promoted, and have it like you said, they get that more jeopardy from it. You've got like I say, if they're 18, you've got 14 league fixtures, possibility of four extra games for the playoffs if you go all the way. Well done if you win. And then we've got a National Cup running alongside that, which maybe you can play a maximum of like 8 or 9 games, depending how big the cup is that year.
I mean,
it's an opt-in or opt-out. And like, even a team that's at like Midlands 5 level, imagine if they got to play a team that was like Midlands 1 level. That'd be a huge day out for them if they had a bit of a cup run.
To be fair, they've got the National Cup structure at the minute where it's tiered. So they have the junior vars, senior vars, and intermediate cup. I think that's not a bad idea to keep that. I think you should have more teams in it, though, because I know that the intermediate cup stops at mid 2. So what's that, level 7, is that? The highest you play.
Yeah, that'd be level 7.
So that's the highest that has a National Cup competition. Now, the reason being that above that level, the leagues are very long. But with all due respect to the teams that are in that level, why are the better teams that aren't National League clubs, why have they not got the opportunity to go and play at Twickenham? Because they're better players. Like, you'll get guys in those leagues that are playing County Championship rugby and might go and play at Twickenham at the end of the season anyway, for their county team, I think.
Yeah. Like, well, this is the other thing about making those leagues smaller, isn't it? By having separation for things like county to happen and be proper. Because so many counties just don't give it enough. Like, I remember,
They really don't care, some of them.
No.
Like, well, Leicestershire, like being... as again, it's a bit, probably, I know we talk about them a lot, but they used to not care at all.
Yeah.
And then fairly recently they started caring. They've won like two or three Division Two championships.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah, and I know Devon always represents pretty well, but it's a big rugby place anyway, and you know, people really get behind it, which is awesome. But then, like, having played in, you know, Derbyshire in the NLD, it was a little bit sort of, you know, it didn't really matter, and guys didn't really want to commit to it because it was like, oh well, you know, our season for such and such might still be happening. If we finish second in our league, we've got a playoff game, which is when the county championship starts. And then again, it becomes like an extra expense on the end of the year. It's like, well, you know, do I have to pay for kit or do I get it for free? Or, you know, how much training have you got to do? You've got to pay out of your own pocket to travel like really far to go and train. Cause like NLDs like Nottingham, Lincolnshire and Derbyshire. If you're living in Derby, you've got to drive to Market Raisin and Louth just for a training session. It's like an hour and a half, hour 45 just to go and train. Like, whereas if it had its own slot at the end of the season and it had a real dedicated time to it, maybe it would be easier to do that because it's less of an expense or crotch on your time because you're not training with your club anymore because the season is done.
You know what I mean? I mean, that's kind of where we get into the territory of almost how they do in New Zealand, where they have the split club season and provincial season. So if you're a club player, you play Feb to May, June time. Then if you play in provincial rugby, then you'll play for the rest of what's their winter, isn't it? Our summertime. But I think the county championship is something that can definitely almost represent those leagues. Like I say, we're having it more of a county split. Because anybody who plays, you know, grassroots rugby will know, like, in the leagues, your best games, like the big, well, the ones you look forward to are the local derby games, which happen semi-rarely.
Even if they're poo, even if the people you're playing are poo or you're doing poo,
yeah,
you still think that's going to be the best game just because it is a little bit, you know, it's probably going to be a little bit shirty. More people will turn up and watch. The night out will be better if you get the bragging rights. Whereas if you go and play a team, like, let's say if you're less like a Leicestershire based team, like Wigs, you've played for, going to play Peterborough. You've got no issue with Peterborough. I don't know who the fuck they are, but Melbourne Mowbray makes
sense. So, well, last season just gone, I think it was, there was four Leicestershire teams in the league. So you had Syston, Wigs, Lutterworth and Market Harborough. And you've got four ready-made huge games there. Yeah. That's your season sorted. The rest of them ones don't matter. Like, that's what you really, the only one they want to be involved in. But like, I think of like the local competitions I've played, like, in Coventry's got so many teams. Imagine if like a Coventry club championship would be probably some of the most violent rugby played, because my word, Coventry has got some scummy clubs.
there would be not a single car with its wheels left on it in that car park at the end of the game.
But I mean it's a running joke that we pick on Coventry nearly weekly, but like, Coventry is a big rugby city, really, by as it goes. It's not the biggest city in the country by any stretch, but it's got so many rugby clubs.
It's quite unique. Yeah, it's quite unique. Like, it's quite unique, like Leicester in many ways. Like, you can be in Leicester on a Saturday when both teams are playing at home, City and Tigers, and there'd be both 20,000 people in the stadiums.
Yeah.
And Coventry's kind of got that as well. Like, Wasps do really well, and the football obviously has fallen off a little bit, but like you said, there's loads of football clubs, there's loads of rugby clubs, there's quite a big football club historically.
Coventry is certainly a city that's got like a rugby identity that's quite distinct. It is an uncompromising, tough sort of city. Like, every club in Coventry is got like a bit of like niggle about them, like, and it's a, everyone you go, oh no, we're playing a team in Cov, and that's something that you kind of, and you go, all right, but that's what rugby is about, that different kind of styles of play. And okay, that's the Coventry way, if you will, like, for almost all of the Coventry teams. But then that's something you can almost kind of celebrate when that's like their weekly thing, and then you get to the playoffs and you go, oh, fuck's sake, we've got to go and play this big quarterfinal, semi-final. We've got to go to play a team in Cov. And not only that, we're going to play the best Cov team. So they're going to be good and they're going to be punchy. And we're away, so we're going to have a Cov ref. So it's going to be...
Warwickshire refs.
You're going to... Yeah. When I play for Lions as well, Rugby Lions, obviously it's a Warwickshire team, but it's not in Cobh. Everybody Cobh hates us. So we just get beaten up every weekend. We'd win. We were better than that at rugby, but like it was always a black eye off too. It was always a shirty game, but it was always really fun to play in. You want that local rivalry, they're the most fun to play in, and you want it where you know somebody on the other team or somebody knows somebody on the other team. We played a pre-season game against Vipers, which are a local team to where we are, and like they were the league, well, I think they might be league or two below us, so we won quite convincingly, but like I think there's a little bit extra to a preseason game because it's your rivals. So if that's your week in, week out fixture, and okay, you might be like a top end of your team and you've got 10 teams in your league, they're all really local and you're going to win like seven of them hands down. You might have two or three tough games. But for the clubs at the bottom end of that league, like they get a chance to play the best teams in their area and okay, they're going to get probably going to lose. But if you get 45 minutes of a decent performance against them, and that one time you get a crack at them every year and you turn them over one day and the lowly team beats the better team in the county, that's a day again, in that club's history. I don't think you get that chance as it is now. You get I don't know, no disrespect to either of these clubs, but like Aylston, St James in Leicester go and play Belper every week in Derby. They're not big clubs. It doesn't mean anything to them to play those games.
Yeah. I think, I think I've got to kick it back to American football again. You hear about in high school and college, all these rivalry games that become massive, because it's within their division. They play each other. Yes, they play each other every year. And it's the idea is you have to beat each other to go and play the rest, which I know makes more sense because America's a massive country, but there's so many clubs in England. It's the same thing. There's nowhere near as many teams in America as there is clubs for football and rugby in the UK. There just isn't. So I don't see why we can't do that. And I think, again, we've got to have a national league for me, which is your gateway to the top level. And that's where the best teams in the country at the amateur level play. National one, or we could just call it the national league. Yeah. And then you've got national two, a north and a south. And if they're going to do a Midlands one, so we've got those three levels there, which makes perfect sense because, again, that's kind of like the preliminary to being at the highest level of the amateur game. So, again, if you can get there, fair play. You're better than the teams at what will be level five, as I want to see it. So how I want to see level five then is instead of having just one Midlands Premier, a Southwest Premier, a London Premier, London and Southeast Premier, and a Northern Prem, let's have like four divisions of each of these. And like I say, then have the playoffs to get into the national leagues too, and so on. So you get one team from each of those playoffs goes into, two of them will go into National 2 South, two of them will go into National 2 North, two of them will go into National 2 Midlands from these sort of these 12 subdivisions as it will be across the three areas. I think that would work perfectly because, again, in those smaller leagues, you create more local rivalries. You've got games that matter a little bit more. It doesn't, if you want to make the playoffs, you have to win most of your games. So it adds a bit more jeopardy. And it means that the games all mean something because maybe if you can somehow finish second, you get a chance to still get promoted to National 2, even if you've had a few blips in your division. Or if you don't, at least you know because you're not playing 26 games a year, maybe by like halfway through the season, the season's done. Oh, we're not going to make the playoffs, but we're not going to get relegated. Well, instead of having to play like 12 more games, you've only got to play five or six. Yeah. So it makes it a lot easier. And then you might have a cup run. You might go, well, do you know what? We're not going to get promoted this year, but we've got fucking this team in the cup. We know they're a league below us. We know we can beat them. Let's have a cup run this year. And you go that way. You have maybe a national finals day at Twickenham or Six Ways or wherever they would play it. Do you know what I mean? Like I said, you can still have levels of that. You can have like a national Vars, which is maybe Midlands. Well, what would be like level six down for all those teams. Then maybe level five to level three is like the national cup. And so it's like 60 odd teams. You can opt in or opt out and you play it and have it. So that way, and then once the season's done by like April kind of time, because it's shorter anyway, then all of May is county championship rugby, four weekends in a row, group stage, finals day at Twickenham. It's 4 weeks in a row. You've got to do it. That's what it is. Bang, done. It's had its own time. No distractions, no playoff games or whatever. And then from June onwards, you can have a focus on a proper sevens circuit. You know what I mean? Clubs can actually have a proper sevens program in place. So like maybe if the guys haven't been selected for county, as a club, you can go, right, the guys who haven't made the county grade, June, May and June is going to be your time to train for the sevens tournaments, July onwards and stuff. And we're going to enter and have a proper sevens program as a club, or as a makeup like the 99s. You know, it's you can get more of these things happening, and the sevens game will then get better, which means the pathway is going to be better for players to maybe go to GB or something like that, even if they've been playing Saturday rugby their whole life. It just creates segregating it into a sensible kind of thing. It looks like a nice fucking Viennetta or Viennese, whatever it's called, Neapolitan ice cream.
Yeah,
the chocolate is the chocolate is the season. Then you got the county and cups and stuff like that. Then you got the pink, which is the strawberry, being the summer of sevens. It becomes proper. We've got a proper calendar rather than fucking all over the place how it is now.
I think that's a really good point. I didn't really think of that, but like I said, that sevens, have a proper seven season. Why? Again, if you have these small local leagues, you can then just go, all right, well, it's local leagues, we just have our sevens comp. You can just be one weekend. But if you just know you've got a guaranteed, like, this is our sevens weekend, we have say, the County Cup sevens, and then maybe have, like, top three, four teams from there and go into, like, a regional sevens. And then you actually have, a proper seven season, which only has to be, like, at longest, say, two, 3 weekends for the best teams.
And then you can have a finals day at Twickenham running, like, the weekend before the London sevens or running at the same time at the Stoop. And if you buy a ticket for the sevens at Twickenham, you get free entry to the other one as well.
Yeah, I think it's a potential really good idea. Or even you could have, like, you say you're at the Stoop next door and say the Saturday is National Sevens Day.
Yeah.
And then you get tickets for the Sunday. So if if you play and you can go, you get free entry, you can go and watch.
Yeah.
If you've got tickets, you can go, you get free entry to the National Sevens. But they say have a proper seven season. Because at the minute, it's basically seen as a piss up for players and a money spinner for a few clubs who've got enough room to have a campsite next door.
Well, I said it before, when they ran that 24/7 circuit of the year, it was so easy to qualify for, like, to be the best, one of the best 16 teams in the country and have a finals day at Lady Bay, which, no disrespect to Nottingham Rugby Club, you know, good club, a good history in that, but, like, it's not a great venue. It's not bigging the game up. That's not growing the game. That's going, oh, we'll put together this circuit. If you turned up to the sevens at Loughborough University and somehow got in the final against them, because they're probably going to win their own tournament because they're actually set for it, they're fucking athletes, fair play to them. Fair enough, you know, if you do that two or three times, if you actually turn up to this tournament, which they were making random tournaments, like qualifiers for it as well, which was so weird. Whereas, like you say, if you've got these divisions already set out, play your tournaments or, you know, and then if you go from there,
you can still have, obviously, like, it doesn't have to get in the way of the independent seven circuit that, obviously, it's not even a circuit, is it? It's a string of loosely connected tournaments that teams will play in. And like I say, you might have that 24/7 thing, but I just think that the game, sevens has been so neglected by the RFU as a format of the game. Like, and okay, you don't necessarily want, like, I know they had that Super Series that was, I don't know if it's semi-successful. They got a few, basically they were backed by a few sportswear brands. I'm not sure how much it took off. But, like, you're not probably going to get a fully pro seven circuit going just because of the nature of seven. It is fun, more first and foremost. But like I say, you have club sevens. Like, that's a fun, they say 2-3 weekends at most for, like, pretty much every club in the country just says, oh yeah, we'll stick a sevens team together and they play in one tournament. I mean, that's a good idea. It's to formalise that game because there isn't enough of it. We're starting our team, so there's an opportunity for people to come and play a bit of sevens. We're hoping, obviously, to get, you know, a women's team and a men's team playing sevens. That's something that isn't currently available if you're at a club. Like, you have to find someone like us or start your own. And like I said, there's a handful of clubs that will have a proper sevens team. And that is strange to me. Like, and as well, because of how, obviously, it's seven players aside, you could put together 3 sevens teams for one club and go and play in a number of tournaments that way. Like, you could easy to do that and have, like, clubs have first, second, third teams as it is. You could easily do that with seven teams. How about the second team sevens championship?
Exactly. Here's the thing, though. This is why grassroots, some people are saying grassroots is, in air quotes, dying in some ways. And like we've said, because teams, guys don't want to play week in, week out anymore. You've got to work really hard to create an atmosphere where people want to turn up and give their time.
I think they're
just not paid 50 quid tops, which they're going to spend in the bar anyway.
It's just not enough sort of engagement, I don't think. I don't think there's enough thought about what makes the game most fun for the people actually playing, who are the people that matter most, ultimately. Yeah. Like, I think some people, I think the RFU and I think the county RFUs think that they're the important ones. It's their game and they let the players play it. And I think you're like, no, the players are the important people. Without the players, you haven't got a game. And
yeah,
you know, absolutely. we're sort of the generation where we are the ones who have, I guess, benefited from the cultures of clubs that were built up over 20 years ago, where you would have four teams a weekend would turn out, like, no matter what. And those sort of infrastructures that are there, and we've now played that, but how modern life is now, like, that isn't carrying on. So you've got to do something else.
There was fuck all else to do in the late 90s, early 2000s. That what you had a phone that had Snake on it.
Yeah.
Now you have a phone which is like a fucking computer that until like 2010 was, no computer was as good as what a phone is now, pretty much. I mean, like, laptops and all that are as good as what your phone is. You can do everything I can do on my laptop and do on my phone. Like, stuff is so advanced now. There's so much more to do. There's nights out of better than they've ever been in terms of things that you can do. Like, have you been to the fucking cinema in the last couple of years? It's what an experience that kind of thing is now. The screen is like the size of a fucking football pitch. Like, life has got so much better that it's to give up all your time for a sport which might be killing you. Because all this, again, a sport that might be slowly killing you in 50 years, it might give you dementia or something like that, to be giving up all your time for it. And then to be sort of, you know, told that you have to pay a tenner for the privilege week in, week out to pay for fucking some Lucozades or whatever. I don't think it flies with a lot of people anymore. And this is what I mean. And this is why I think a lot of people are talking about this. And like, a few people have said this to us who've got in touch. And the reason why they're interested in playing for us is because they don't have the time to give to a 30 game a season anymore. Do you know what I mean? Like, on a Saturday. Just for the fact that they enjoy it. Like, they haven't got that ability to do it anymore because they've either got kids or they've got commitments, maybe they're still studying, maybe they're trying to work and study at the same time, so they can't go and train two or three times a week. Whereas we have the advantage of what we want to do, that you can train remotely from September till February, then get together for some training camps before the summer. Having to give up every night, and they can go to the gym in their own time. It's not like they're having to, and then December comes, people don't want to train on a cold, horrible pitch. Like, how shit, and you've been at a club, I've been at loads of clubs, how dreadful is like Tuesday night training when it hits December?
Oh, it's horrible. I remember we,
like, five people turn up.
The problem you have as well is you're never allowed to train on the first team pitch, so you don't want to cut it up. So every club that I've been at has normally had a real pooey second team pitch that's got just about floodlit, which has got like a cavern in the middle, which just becomes a swamp from about October onwards. It is never dry. I'm pretty sure the third team pitch at Obi Wiggs has got a bit in the corner, like, that's always muddy. It could be 35 degrees for 3 weeks in a row. The rest of the pitch is bone dry and it's still boggy in this one patch.
Looks like the Everglades.
In this one patch of the pitch. And I'm pretty sure that's how everybody trains on a Thursday night.
So I'm going to bullet point now because I think we've said a lot, and I think we'll see if there's any more to add. What have you got, though?
One more very big point, which I think is something that kills the grassroots game, is the sort of mercenaryism of semi-professional rugby. Some people who don't care about the club they're playing for, they will travel an hour to pick up 200 quid, 150 quid a week to play in a game. And you see it quite a lot with some of these sort of level, tier five, tier six sort of teams, where there's a good team, they're not going to get promoted, they're not going to get relegated, so they just go to shit from about February onwards. No one trains because they don't care. They turn up on the weekend and pick up their money, win, lose, or draw. They don't care. And you see some teams that have been really, or decent teams, just start their results go really bad. Some teams that are sort of well out of it for most of the season, getting battered every week, but they're not paying their players. They start, once they're actually playing, because they're playing for the love of it, they pick up their results a little bit towards the end of the year. But it's, you know, it's that is a bit of a disease on the game. And I think this kind of localized league thing, I don't know, does it, I think you can probably get away with probably booting that or trying to stamp some of that out of the game a little bit. And that those players who are looking for a payday can probably, if they're good enough, they can back it up at that top level. Otherwise, what, you know, are you going to, for the way we ideally would like it to be, where there's not like massive reward for getting up to that level, you're playing this mid this season long thing, you're not, even if you want to pay players, I'm not against paying players, you've got a season long thing to be chasing in like a national cup in a playoff system. You don't have to, you know, normally in most leagues like two or three teams run away with it. So then you've got four or five teams that have got sort of mercenaries is maybe harsh, but you know the guys. I mean, they're there because they get paid.
I think that's a fair point. They get signed. They don't sign, if you know what I mean. They don't want to sign. They get signed, and it's,
yeah. You kind of try and avoid that nothing to play for almost half of the season. So even the guys who are being paid to play, and they're only there because they really want them because they're being paid. They at least they've got something they can be playing for. If they're going to be in these big games, it's worth them kind of committing to the club that's paying them. I appreciate why clubs try and pay players. I think some clubs pay the wrong kind of player instead of
fucking too right, man. Yeah. Honestly, too right. I've seen far too many guys, and this is again where it links back to like the whole thing about clubs. And I'll tell you this now, a lot of amateur clubs and sort of semi-pro, if you want to call them that, have relied on the goodwill of good people for far too fucking long. I've seen lads who have given everything because they're desperate to play for the first team of their hometown. They've given everything and they work their asses off to get selected, and they've been treated like shit a lot. They do really well and they're a great player. They're a first name on the team sheet kind of person. They don't get a penny. They don't get looked after that. And they're actually paying to be there. But then someone who isn't got that same level of care for the club a lot of the time, just comes in and, like you say, picks up a paycheck or something like that and is getting paid to be there. Whereas someone who literally fucking bleeds the colours just gets, you know, a well done. And for some people, that's enough. But I just don't, looking at it, I don't think that's fair. And I see that all too much. And this is what I mean. I think a lot of clubs have ridden that for far too fucking long. And this coronavirus, I think, is going to kick a lot of people in the fucking dick. Really do. A lot of clubs are going to really struggle after this, because people have, there's stuff outside of rugby. A lot of people have seen that now. There's a lot of other stuff to pursue. You know, like I said, you're playing a game that is slowly killing you in a lot of ways. How many niggles and problems have you got? How many niggles and problems? I've got loads. Guys I know have got so many problems, so many niggles in that. And we don't get paid to turn up and do this. I've been there before in pre-season hearing, oh, this is what such and such a club is doing. This is what this Prem team's doing. And I'm going, oh, am I on that salary, am I? I'm being ran into the fucking ground and I'm dying. I've been doing conditioning for an hour and a half session straight. I'm fucking vomiting and dying. But you know I'm a spewer anyway from back in the day in fitness. I'm like, shit, I'm hanging up my ass for it. I barely touched the ball all pre-season. And I'm getting told, oh, this is what such and such are doing. We're going to be, you know, great. They get paid fucking 500 grand a year to do it, mate. I'm paying fucking 50 quid a month to be here. Do you know what I mean? And it's just, and this is what I mean. We need to get to a level where it's more enjoyable because of the games rather than all the stuff around it, where it's not such an attritional league where conditioning and so that doesn't become as important. It's more about winning week to week because you've got to make the playoffs. Yeah. That level of fun is there then. There's something, like you said, something to burn for. Let's get to the playoffs because we might make it to national two. Whereas if you get like eight games in and you know, oh, we're 50-50, we're probably not going to make the playoffs. Maybe, like you say, you have the cup to go for, or maybe your goal as an individual player is, well, I want to keep playing well because I want the county selectors to send me a letter to play for county in May. Do you know what I mean? It's things like that.
And it's like that little thing that you have, that regional, that more localised structure as well. The county selectors, they haven't got a golf hearsay of some bloke in this league. They just see everybody. They know who the good players are. They watch them week in, week out.
It's easy to go and scout,
Because they're always playing each other. I think you probably hit the nail on the head with that. But hopefully COVID is a real leveler for this structure. Because I think there's, I think some clubs have got used to paying players, and they approach players and say, oh, 150 quid a week or a game, come and play for us, to guys who aren't worth the money. Like, that's, it's not lots of money, but for a hobby, that's quite a lot of money. And you're paying people who aren't better than the amateurs you're playing every week. Like, it's one thing, okay, if you're national league level, to be paying players a half decent amount of money to turn out every week. But when you're paying people in a league that's, it's not universal, and you're not the best team in that league, but you're just used to it.
And that player isn't going to get you to National 2. They're not on their own. I've seen that a lot.
Like, some clubs are just used to it, and they need to get out of that habit. And I say, I don't think that semi-professionalism is a good thing for the sport. And hopefully, I say, a localised structure that can really, it doesn't matter how much money you're paying, because you're still paying, you know, arseholes down the road who have got, you know, Bob, the 74-year-old hooker on the bench, just in case. You know, you're going to feel like a bit, I would feel like we have a twat turning up if I know that I'd spent about $6,000 on that starting team just for to turn up that week. Like, it's, you know, you're getting people playing, you want people playing for the right reasons, because everyone's going to be better off. Because, I mean, all these guys who are turning out for money every week, they played for the love of it at one point. And to be fair, I can see why guys want to turn up and get paid. If you're playing 30 games a season, you're knocking the shit out of each other three times a week. And like you said, you don't, it's a lot to be playing in the current structure as it is. Would you choose to do it? Like, even playing at that level, when you're playing at that high level, and it's fun while you do it, but when it's week in, week out, do you want to do it for the just the fact that, oh, I can say I've played this level? No, you want some money for reward. I think if you've got a short season with a playoff system where you've got big games, it's not, you know, I'm enjoying this. It's a small season. That was fun. Now it's some big games. If we lose, we're done. So you want to win. And you've got that atmosphere. It's a big deal.
So I think, sum up then, keep our sort of National League as like the premier division of amateur, and that's like the gateway for young guys who are that good, who maybe haven't made the pro grade straight away. Because I know we've spoken before about getting rid of academies and stuff like that, which is an episode I'm sure we'll cover, probably give that an episode all of its own in the coming weeks. But so get, you know, keep that as that premier level where guys and that who are good enough can maybe get to the professional game. That's where they get scouted and spotted. Then you've got like your tier below that, which is the aspirational level. For teams such as, again, it's just because we know them, Hinckley, who, to be fair to them, have put in a really good wage structure and stuff like that. And their product is good. They get good attendances and you know, they've got nice pre-match stuff and all that stuff. So those clubs who are looking at maybe being an established premier amateur, that's great. So that's like the chasing pack. And then below that, you've got the chasing pack for that level. The teams who were maybe at the start of their journey to being a more professional amateur club. And then below that, you've got your teams who are a little bit more Saturday League, but they maybe fancy playing at the higher level one year. So they're going to push to get promoted. Yes, maybe they lose 80% of their games and get relegated again, but they've had a good time. And it's not like they're playing a 26-30 game season and losing all 26. Maybe they're only losing 18 games. Do you know what I mean? It's just less traumatic all in.
Yeah.
And then alongside that, having a national cup that runs or regional cups, which transfer into a national finals or whatever. And then having the segregation across the board to have a proper county card, which is separate of its own, because more people can watch it and enjoy it anyway. And then having a proper sevens calendar that can be facilitated by clubs, or setting up proper sevens club, like, which is what we're trying to do, and having them in place to be facilitated by having players who are readily available and not bollocked from playing 30 plus games a season.
I think we've got a pretty decent plan. Obviously, the RFU is probably not going to listen to us, but it's good that they've made the first step to say they want to try and do something. I just think it's, like you said, being a little bit RFU and kind of overcomplicate it.
It's so overcomplicated.
I mean, you've got to appreciate that not every club in the country, in fact, the vast majority of clubs in the country, probably aren't fussed about climbing up the ladders. They just want to get by and give a place for lads to play every week. Take a few lads in the bar and have a nice time on a Saturday afternoon and evening. And I mean, imagine the Southwest, especially just because of it's a rugby area. It's probably full of really small clubs, like village clubs, basically, that they don't care about trying to get to the semi-professional level. They just literally want a place to go and play on a Saturday and ideally just play the next village over and have a scrap that's fun and then go for a beer. And that's really, I think you've got, you, when you split it up locally, you facilitate all the above. So you have that almost pre-professional setup, like we said. Then you say that aspirational level where it's we are the want to be the best in our area. And you just got the, like, you know, the local leagues where the good teams do well, but the guys who are there for fun, they're there for fun, but they've not got to play 400 games a year.
Less games that are in closer proximity with more potential financial earning overall is going to be more economically stable for clubs. And in addition to that, because of those 3 points there, there might be more money available to sort of make your club better. If there are bigger games, which you can have more of those Friday night games and stuff like that, so you can facilitate a better atmosphere for your players. So that is, helps your player retention for one. Less games in general, I think, is going to be more player retention in general and a lot better fitness and a lot better quality of rugby as well, because you'll be constantly putting your first team out rather than struggling to get them out all season because they're all injured or knackered, having to rotate and such. And overall, a more enjoyable product for the people watching it on the sideline. And I think that's it. I think that, like you say, I think that is the plan. And the RFU should be fucking listening to it, because I'm going to be big-headed about it. I think we've got the fucking nail on the head right there.
I think it is a good idea. At the very, it may be, like you said, the specifics of the structure we've come up with could do with some work, but let's suppose we've come up with this on the spot at 11:30 at night on a Sunday.
This is not what we made earlier.
Maybe chatting bollocks. But the core points to what it is we're saying, like I say, there's less games, more meaningful games, local proximity, more money for the clubs, more fun for the players. That's what it's going to be about. Like, it's not like the professional level where we always hear moan about, oh, well, the Premier Rugby won't release their players, and they want as many home games as possible because they need the income literally to survive. But like, for a grassroots club, like, they don't live and die by a couple of extra home games a year. Like, it's a volunteer thing. They probably piss money away most of the time. Like, most of the people who work at a grassroots club, they're volunteers, so they don't care. Like, they'd rather, and they say, you have a full house of, say, three teams at home one weekend, and you've got everybody from this, no one's got like a 2-hour drive home. Like, if you play, if only had to play the clubs down the road, you, no matter where you were playing, home or away, you can go and get pissed and leave the car there and pick it up the next day.
or you just facilitate having more minibuses because they're cheaper anyway to rent. You're only driving 20 miles instead of 180.
I mean, if you're not more than like 5-10 miles from home, you just get boozed in at the club you're at and get a taxi home, and it's not extortion. Yeah. Like, yeah. It's better for everybody. Yeah. You spend more at the bar at the club you're at, and everybody does, because there's more people going to watch because it's local. You know, you've not got to go, oh, it was an hour and a half away game, so I'm not going to watch the lads this week. Like I say, you're not playing, you're injured. Well, it's only down the road. Go and watch.
Yeah. RFU, you're welcome. That's all I'm going to say. And listen to that. If you agree with what we're saying, give us a shout. If you don't agree with what we're saying, give us a shout. You know where to find us by now. We've got the website online, and we're on Instagram, and got the email address. You know, drop us a line. If you feel the same, maybe we could do a petition of some sort, or, like, you know, take this to some sort of review, which I'm sure we'll do. There is probably going to be a review on it, which I will be going to, and I'll be throwing this kind of stuff at them, because, you know, like, I've seen in the strategy, they're talking about removing things like playoffs and stuff like that, and I think those are the things we need more. We need more playoffs, more jeopardy ridden games. So Hopefully that's what we see. But I don't know about you, but I'm going to call the hammer on that, because fucking, I think we're done there. We're doing that a good hour and a half nearly.
I fear for future me having to edit this, because I think it's going to be long.
Thank you for listening. If you want to get in touch, you can do so on Instagram at the99sRugby, by email at 99.sevens@gmail.com. Sevens is spelled with letters. Or via our website. Once again, shout out to our crowdfunderers. Anyone else interested in donating, please have a look. We have a number of awards available, so you can get some of our sweet stash and a weekly shout out on the show. For your non-alcoholic beer, ciders, spirits and more, check out yardacollective.co.uk and use discount code 99rugby24 for 5% off orders over £10. And keep a lookout for our new upload schedule, our new dedicated MLR show on a Monday, and our main show every Wednesday. So until then, stay classy, planet Earth.